Hello, I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor, and this is the programme that explores the world we live in through the work and the voices of artists. Welcome to the Cultural Frontline. This week, we're looking at the art world's latest digital phenomenon, NFTs, or non-fungible tokens. And if you're wondering what that means, then stay with us. We'll be hearing from artists making NFTs and finding out how this new form of digital art is shaking things up. Coming up, American writer, artist and curator Kenny Schachter on how the traditional art world feels about NFTs.
It's a big, big change. The art world is up in arms and, I mean, vehement. I've had a whole new community of trolls attacking me from all angles.
And the women and non-binary creatives planning to bring more diversity to the world of digital art.
When artists sort of put forward their identity, it might not be necessarily rewarded. It begs the question of, do collectors in the NFT space believe in art by Black women? And what does it mean when it's not necessarily translated into financial support?
All that and more coming up on the Cultural Frontline. So stay with us. Video artwork created by the Canadian musician Grimes, the source code for the World Wide Web, Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey's first ever tweet, and memes of dancing cats, they've all been sold as NFTs. Pretty much any digital asset can be an NFT, and it's big business. American digital artist Beeple sold the world's most expensive NFT artwork for $69 million this year. An NFT, which stands for non-fungible token, is a digital token that gives you ownership of a totally unique work of art. To explain more about how NFTs work, I'm joined by the art business editor at ArtNet News, Tim Schneider. Tim, what is an NFT for our listeners who might have never heard of one?
I would describe an NFT as a unique alphanumeric code, meaning just a one-of-a-kind string of letters and numbers that acts as proof of ownership for a specific digital file or a physical object.
And in my naivety, I simply thought a digital artwork was automatically an NFT. But that's not the case, is it? What can actually be sold as an NFT?
You can pretty much sell anything as an NFT. It can be a still digital image. It can be a short animation. It can be a digital recording of audio, for instance, a particular song or album. There are multiple artists who have sold those. The NFT itself is not the artwork. It's just essentially a digital certificate of ownership for an artwork. What separates NFTs from digital certificates of authenticity that you could have bought and sold a generation ago is that they're tracked on this thing called the blockchain.
And what is a blockchain?
I'm glad you asked. Crypto is sort of a Russian nesting doll of jargon, it turns out. Think of a blockchain as a permanent, super secure spreadsheet or database that's maintained collectively by a very large network of different computers owned by different people. The blockchain essentially just tracks who owns what, when they acquired it, where they got it, how much they paid for it. And so you actually have this perfect, and on paper at least, perfectly trustworthy chain of title.
What opportunities might NFTs present that weren't around before in the art world?
Well, one of the things that you'll hear talked about a lot in the NFT space is this idea that it eliminates a lot of the traditional gatekeepers that controlled who was successful and who wasn't in the traditional art market. And the idea is that because NFTs are much more of a platform of exchange between artists and the public, you don't necessarily need the approval of any of those people in order to find an audience and sell your work for a tremendous amount of money.
And what are the negatives of getting involved with NFTs? What impact do they have?
One thing you'll hear in a global sense is that NFTs have a really significant ecological cost. The vast majority of the NFT trade right now is taking place on a specific blockchain called the Ethereum blockchain. And the thing about the Ethereum blockchain is that it burns a tremendous amount of energy. By some estimates earlier this year, the Ethereum blockchain consumes as much energy every year as the entire nation of Ecuador, which is not really a great thing for a planet that is in distress in a lot of different ways. One of the big complaints you'll hear from the art community about NFTs is that there aren't a lot of artists who are really pushing boundaries, making people think, doing new things with the format. They're just creating these digital trading cards almost that can sell for tremendous amounts of money, which incidentally is also a bunch of art people's main concern with the traditional art market. So very quickly, yeah, all of these things just start to collide.
Art market writer and podcaster Tim Schneider. Despite million-dollar sales from the likes of Canadian singer Grimes and American celebrity socialite Paris Hilton, the majority of artists commanding high sales from NFT artworks are men. Many artists and buyers remain anonymous online, but cryptocurrency trading platforms have reported that only around a fifth to a quarter of their customers are women. As the booming market in NFTs takes off, there are organisations actively trying to make this part of the art world more diverse. Women of Crypto Art, or WOCA, is an international collective of over 1,000 artists, which aims to highlight and promote women crypto artists. Her Story DAO is a collective supporting the work of black female artists in the NFT world. Scottish crypto art collector and co-founder of Women of Crypto Art, Etta Totti, and Senegalese artist and member of Her Story DAO, Linda Rebays, told the Cultural Frontline about what it's like to be a woman in NFT art. Are there more challenges and barriers for female artists? Here's Linda Rebays.
The space is overwhelmingly male and overwhelmingly white. So just in terms of meeting artists who are women or interacting with them on social media platforms can be difficult. You have to be very intentional about finding other women artists. I think as an artist coming in and feeling like a minority might make it very difficult for you to feel like you have a space or place in it.
Here's Scottish art collector Etta Totti.
There are various barriers facing women. There's a lot of harassment and abuse. The world of crypto art, it's all on the internet, really. You know, it's not in physical exhibitions in buildings. And that's a place where trolls just thrive. When talking to some of the women when WOCA first started, they tended to promote their art on Instagram because they felt that Twitter was too masculine. However, Twitter is the shop window for crypto art. So if you want to compete in the same marketplace as the male artists, you have to market your art through Twitter.
If you just do hashtag NFT on Twitter, some of the accounts that have the most clout will pop up. And I can bet that the first 10 or 15 pieces of artwork we'll see will involve some kind of female nudity, will involve some kind of cyberpunk aesthetic, violence. There's a lot of violence as well. You don't necessarily have to see who's tweeting, but it does feel overwhelmingly male because of the sort of subjects that you come across.
Many collectors buying NFT art were already in the cryptocurrency world. The owners of Beeple's highest selling works include an early investor in Ethereum and the CEO of a cryptocurrency trading platform. How are the tastes of these powerful players shaping the market? And do they put women at a disadvantage?
There are lots of people who made their fortune in cryptocurrency, and they've got lots of money to invest. And these people are sometimes called whales. The crypto whales tend to be men, with some notable exceptions. The artists they're prepared to pay lots of money for are the male artists. You know, if you say, like, if you're willing to pay more than $50,000 for a piece of art, then that's a substantial sum. And that would tend to be male artists that they'll pay that for.
Do women of colour face particular disadvantages when trying to break into the crypto art world? Here's Linda Rebays.
I think women of colour are at a disadvantage in the blockchain space. And for a variety of reasons, some of them are financial, and some of them I think are just about really representation and also the value we placed on on art from different artists. And sort of an example of this is the Digital Diaspora, which was a curated exhibition on Afrofuturism by Black, queer, and women artists. And it was put together by the collective Her Story DAO, which represents artists of very similar backgrounds. And so one of the things we saw is that some of the highest earning Black women in the space were part of that exhibition, but they made a little bit less than their floor. To me, it suggests the idea that when artists sort of put forward their identity, it might not be necessarily rewarded, especially if they're from minority backgrounds. And I think it begs the question of, do collectors in the NFT space believe in art by Black women? And what does it mean when it's not necessarily translated into financial support?
Given the challenges, why should female artists get involved in the world of NFT art? Digital art collector Etta Totti.
You get a worldwide audience, really. It's not like putting your art in an exhibition in your local town. You could get people from all over the world seeing your art on the internet and buying it. There's also, it's a lot cheaper than paying a gallery who would maybe take 50% commission from everything that you sell. You're looking at a much lower commission fee.
Women should still get involved because I personally, selfishly, want to see more people who look like me. And most importantly, I want collectors who look like me. I think the second reason is purely financial. One of the reasons why cryptocurrency give women a different kind of freedom is that your wallet is your wallet. Generally, and typically for women from my background, my financial gains are just kind of communitarian. It's for everyone to use and be entitled to. Versus if it's a ledger and it's my ledger online, I'm the only person who has eyes on it. I think that affords me a different kind of freedom. And then there's the other side about being able to sort of determine what kind of contracts you set for yourself through the smart contract. So essentially, being able to decide how much your artwork is valued, and so you're able to set your own prices.
There is a real feminist potential to sort of reclaim your image. There was a little girl called the Disaster Girl, and she had a strange expression on her face when there was a building burning in the background. And years later, that image of her has sold for quite a large sum of money. And because it's her image, she owns it. If you have done anything as a woman, then you own that image, and you, or video footage or music or whatever it is, and you can make that into an NFT, which someone can buy. So there's great potential there. I've spoken to so many women artists who were on the verge of giving up crypto art, and they said, oh, my work's not selling, no one's buying it, I'm just going back to my day job. And by having the support network there, people would say, no, your work is valuable, your collector will come along, you know, don't give up.
Scottish art collector Etta Totti and Senegalese artist Linda Rebaise. This is the Cultural Frontline on the BBC World Service. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor. Next, NFTs have shaken up the traditional art world, as artists can now sell work via online platforms without involving a gallery. But if the traditional art world has been disrupted by NFTs, galleries are getting in on the act. In April, the Superchief Gallery opened in New York, claiming to be the first physical gallery to sell NFTs. At the same time, an exhibition of NFT art opened at Beijing's UCCA lab. Next month, we'll see the launch of Institute, which claims to be the first art world platform to sell NFTs. It will open alongside a real-world exhibition of NFT art in a London gallery. The writer, art dealer and artist Kenny Schachter is curating the exhibition. He was one of the early adopters in the NFT world, minting his first work last year, and he's been creating NFTs and writing about the new market ever since. I asked him how the traditional art world feels about NFTs.
I have never seen anything bordering on revolutionary in terms of how it's upsetting and impacting the traditional art market. It's a big, big change. And as a result, the art world has pushed back because I think it's a human defense mechanism. When something new or unfamiliar comes along, your first inclination is to resist. It's a turf battle. So at first, the art world is up in arms and, I mean, vehement. I've had a whole new community of trolls attacking me from all angles. equating NFTs with currency and just attack, attack, attack. As soon as big money hits the table, like it did with the sale of Beeple's NFT at Christie's for $69 million, the art world takes a second position. At first, it's resist and attack. And when there's large amounts of money at stake, then it's embrace and change their position to, oh, we loved it all along. And now Pace Gallery, one of the biggest galleries in the world, just announced that they'll be launching their own platform for NFT. So I think within 6 months to a year, every major gallery or even non-major gallery in the world will be adapting and having platforms of their own to showcase the works of their artists in the form of NFTs.
And if these old school movers and shakers get involved, are they not going to bring with them the same existing hierarchies and gatekeepers to this new frontier, as it were?
The NFT world, let's call it that, and the traditional art world, they are two parallel universes that are colliding. They're in the middle of this kind of explosion of activity, both the crypto digital world and the traditional fine art world. It's a total misconception to think that the NFT world is, you know, this anarchic free-for-all where there are gatekeepers, already there are hierarchies. They're just a different community of people that are in control. So if you wanted to sell an NFT today, the sites that sell the most are Nifty Gateway and Super Rare and Foundation and Makerspace. These are all platforms where you can't just rock up and sell your NFT. You have to be accepted. And the gatekeepers are not the typical art world people. They're people from the tech sector that have landed the responsibility or the role of being curators, quote unquote. So there's already a group of collectors that can shift, move markets according to what they're buying and selling. It's a completely new audience. That's the main thing. It brings a whole, I mean, there's been $2 trillion in market capitalization of Bitcoin since the year 2007. And these people have had nothing to spend their money on until around end of 2017, 2018. So there was like the floodgates just sprung wide open. And then there was this kind of mad gold rush of people speculating and buying NFTs. And that's over for now, but it's never going to go away in my estimation.
You've been making digital art since the 1990s. So how did you get into making NFTs? Is there anything about your art making practice that you've had to change?
Well, absolutely nothing, because I've been making art that employs digital technology, like you said, since the 90s. And I would be doing the same thing, whether the NFT market collapsed and disappeared altogether, nothing would change in my practice. But it's not just digital artists that could benefit from NFTs. Since I've written my articles and given lectures, I've tried to really midwife people, a shepherd artists, and try to give them, you know, the wherewithal, the courage, the knowledge to participate themselves. And literally hundreds of people have been able to sell their works when before that they had no foothold into the market because they couldn't get access to galleries.
And who's selling big in this world? Are we seeing more diverse artists? Can we see more diverse artists with the rise of NFTs?
I think it'll be more diverse in as much as it's going to be more accessible to more people across the globe. And at the same time, unfortunately, like some of the worst parts of the hierarchical exclusive art world applies to the digital art world. You know, we live in a celebrity-driven society, and your followers, your fans, these things drive markets and are used for merchandising and marketing. So Jay-Z just announced that he's doing an NFT, and a whole host of DJs and, you know, Tom Brady, the football player, all kinds of people of this ilk. I mean, in the end, like with the blockchain, we're all going to be tokenized. I mean, already we're measured by money, we're measured by followers, all of these kind of parameters that reduce us to the most basic kind of horrific way, but monetizing people according to your popularity. And there's one artist who's amazing, a Swedish artist called Jonas Lund, and he's tokenized himself and selling shares in his whole artistic practice. And the people that own the tokens can vote on whether or not he should pursue certain artworks or projects.
If NFTs, their natural habitat is the digital world, and now we're seeing NFT shows being curated in physical galleries. Is there a point to that? Do we need that? Why do we need physical galleries to host these kinds of shows when they're all happening online anyway?
Well, I have a show in Cologne right now, which is an NFT show, but the show actually entails sculpture, painting, installation, all different types of things. Nothing will ever replace rubbing your nose up against a drawing, a painting, seeing the visceral brush strokes and the physicality. Art is a physical experience. It's a mental experience coupled with a physical relationship to an object, a thing. So art will never just exist on a phone screen. That would be tragic.
Writer, artist, and curator Kenny Schachter. You can see his exhibition, No Fear in Trying, in real life in London next month and virtually on Arium. If you're enjoying the cultural frontline, then you might like the Arts Hour. This week, Nikki Beide will be speaking to the Nigerian novelist Chibundu Onwuzor about her new novel Sankofa. The US National Ambassador for Young People's Literature, Jason Reynolds, shares his thoughts on getting boys to read. And Argentinian ballerina Marianela Nunes explains how she keeps the classics fresh. One creative couple in Indonesia have been inspired to produce an NFT as a charity fundraiser. In April 2021, the Indonesian Navy submarine KRI Nanggala 402 sank off the coast of Bali, killing all 53 crew members. Sound designer Ruent Chrisley Tyson and illustrator Cindy Tyson, who live in Bali, decided to join forces to do something to mark the event and raise funds for charity. The result is a 53-second animated illustration with a multi-layered soundscape. They spoke to the Cultural Frontline about their piece, 53 Never Forgotten, and what prompted them to create an NFT for charity.
Hi, my name is Ruent Chrisley Tyson, and I'm a sound designer.
Hi, I'm Cindy Tyson, and I'm a content creator based on Bali, Indonesia. I'm also an illustrator in Indonesia.
Cindy and I created an NFT called 53 Never Forgotten, and it's a tribute to the 53 crew members who tragically lost their lives on board KRI Nanggala 402, 100 kilometers off the north coast of Bali in April 2021. From a sound perspective, I recorded sea sounds as well as wind and underwater sounds, and I created a 53-layered soundscape which loops perfectly after 53 seconds. Part of the soundscape is the sound of the Bali Sea. It's 100 kilometers away, but I wanted to capture the authenticity of the waves and the sound, just to be able to say that, you know, this is the sea where it happened.
And for the illustration, I wanted to draw the submarine above the waves to honor the 53 crew members in the radiance of the sun. Then I animated the waves and sun rays into a perfect loop.
Cindy and I got inspired to create this piece after we saw the news surrounding KRI Nanggala 402. We were at the time already based in Bali, and the news circulated fast all over Indonesia. Coming from a family with servicemen and women, it really touched me deeply. And I've also lost an uncle a few years back, and I had to witness what my cousins went through. I think they were 6 and 4 at the time, and it was just tragic, and it just really moved me when I heard the news, and I couldn't imagine what went through the thoughts and minds of the 53 families.
We felt sad hearing the news, and I feel like maybe because I'm pregnant, I felt that how if I lost my husband in that tragedy. So yeah, it's make like a, okay, we need to do something about this to help the people and family of the 53 crew members on board.
Cindy and I were hoping to do a fundraiser, and it just so happened that it was a NFT craze at the time. There was a big wave of adoption. Personally, I've been in the NFT scene since 2017. I got inspired by someone else in the space who uploaded an NFT and sold about 10,000 editions to get himself out of debt. So I was speaking to Cindy, and I told her, what if we created this piece And this NFT token would act as a charity crowdfunding. Everyone could collect the art piece, and by doing so, they would be giving to the 53 families.
So you wanted people to be able to buy this NFT as a charity crowdfund project, and with NFT, I think it could be done easily.
In the NFT world, there is this term called the Genesis piece. And the Genesis piece is your very first NFT art. Because we are entering this new medium, a lot of artists feel this pressure to make their Genesis piece a statement. And it's a statement as we're entering this new medium that in principle gets written forever onto the blockchain. This piece, 53 Never Forgotten, is Cindy and I's first, is our Genesis piece. And we felt we wanted it not to be about us. We wanted it to be about something greater than us, or something that would give back to other people, because that's what the NFT space is about in principle, giving power back to the artists and to the people.
Sound designer Ruant Chrisley Tyson and content creator Cindy Tyson. That's it for this week's programme. You can catch up on any episodes of The Cultural Frontline you may have missed by going online to bbcworldservice.com and searching for us. You can also find our podcast on all your favourite podcast apps. Please do subscribe. We'll be here same time next week with more stories of artists changing the world and the way we see it. Until then, goodbye. Thank you for listening to The Cultural Frontline. Before you go, here's something else you might like.
Elephants, squid, camels, hedgehog,
30 amazing animals,
pangolin, lobsters,
snake,
cat,
polar bear,
cow,
trap,
jaw,
ants, and 30 brilliant ideas that were inspired by them.
A concussion-proof sports helmet,
a race to develop a vaccine,
a new way of exploring space.
30 Animals That Made Us Smarter is back with 30 more tales of how the animal kingdom has helped us solve complex human problems.
These are truly extraordinary creatures.
30 Animals That Made Us Smarter, Season 2, from the BBC World Service.
Keep the noise down and follow me.
Search for 30 Animals That Made Us Smarter wherever you get your podcasts.